you. Buongiorno, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for finding the time to come to this digestive session about Windows Identity Foundation. So that we are clear, there is probably a mistake. Anders is in the other room. What are you doing here? All right. My name is Vittorio Bertocci. I am an architect evangelist in Redmond, as you can guess from my American accent. And I'm here today to talk to you about Windows Identity Foundation, which is the latest entry into the foundational family of technologies in the .NET framework. And before we start, how many of you were in one of my sessions last year at Tech Days? A good percentage. All right. I can't possibly fathom why would you want more, but thank you anyway. And how many of you saw my presentation at PDC on the same subject? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right. So at a certain point, we'll have to make a poll. So how are we going to do this? First, I'm going to introduce the philosophy behind of this. It's not really philosophy, but it's a bit of architecture. Why we are bothering using this new approach to identity, and why it is actually useful. How many of you are architects? All right. All the ones on that side, I have no idea if you are there, if you are doing anything, because there are the lights, but my heart is with you anyway. And how many of you are developers? All right. And that's good, because the vast majority of the time is going to be spent on developer topics. Let's say that we'll give a very quick look at what Windows Identity Foundation can do for you and how you can use it. 1 hour and 15 minutes will be very long and boring for you and tiring for me, but it's a teeny, teeny, teeny fraction of time, which will be absolutely insufficient to touch on all you can do with Windows Identity Foundation. I just finished 2 full days from early morning to evening speaking about that, and we still didn't cover everything. So, just for setting the expectations. So, today, your applications are prisoners of bad habits. The current practices in Windows, in identity management in general, kind of tie you to the implementation. And as a result, as a developer, you need to learn a lot of stuff that often you absolutely don't care about. And also, it ties your application to specific design choices. And when a situation changes and you have to move the application, well, you have to go back there and somehow spend the cycles trying to fix that. So let's try to make these a bit more practical. The ones that saw PDC more or less already saw this. So let's say that here you have your classic ASP.NET application, but it could be any kind of web application. Typically, you have a resource that you want to protect the entire site, here, just one page, and something, some kind of a gateway, that will filter the access to this resource. And how do you actually do that? So here you have your classic user. A user tries to get here and, hop, gets stopped. Gets stopped about code that you wrote about checking if this user actually has the capability of getting in there. What does that mean? Often that means I just want to know if the user is a returning user. So we agree on something, maybe a shared secret, a password and similar, and I want to see if the guy knows it. So that typically means that I'm using passwords of XML certificates. How many of you know what is a certificate? Great, thank you. You just made my presentation. Probably it will stay within the size. Otherwise, I would have had to spill. Or any other system, like maybe here in the banks, they give you the OTPs, those little thingies that you click a button, you get a number, you tap that number. Any system you want. However, the trick is, whatever choice you make, you pay the opportunity cost. That's to say that you are not using something else. And also that means that you are using APIs that you have to learn, that you have to maintain, that will have to change if you change something. So this is an actual constraint, a constraint that I like to represent weave a chain. I know it doesn't look like a chain, but you know it because I said it. Also, if you want to actually recognize vows, you need to keep a stash of vows. So you want to keep a list of usernames, list of passwords, or list of thumbprints of certificates. Anyway, you need to keep a store that keeps all this information. And of course, that's a pain for your user, who's probably already having like many username and passwords to remember. We'll have to remember also yours, but it's a pain for you as well. I don't know if it ever happened to you. In the States, it happens all the time. And, one evening, you come back home, and your wife says, here, you have mail. It's mail from the bank, or from the insurance, or from whatever. And you open it, and they says, dear sir, somebody was drunk in our workforce, so they forgot this laptop in the backseat of one cab in Bangkok. And as a result, all your personal identifiable information may be gone. And so please come back to our branch, and we'll give you a new card. So it's a pain for you, but imagine the disaster from the IT perspective for the people that they have to do that. Keeping a database of credentials is kind of the same, something that can be attacked, something that you can lose, so something that you wouldn't like in your house. And in fact, here, it earns another little chain. But let's be optimistic, and let's say that you finally manage to authenticate, and the execution goes forth to the resource. Things are not done yet, because now you need to be authorized, because you may be a customer of a bank, but for certain operations, maybe you need to be a premium customer, or you need to be authorized to see just your account and not the one of your wife, even if sometimes curiosity is legitimate. And at that point, you need to actually have a code that enforces this control. And that means that you have somewhere knowledge about attributes that tell if you can access or not access. That may mean you may belong to a certain group if this is a level of business application. Or that, again, you are the owner of account number X, but not of this other. And typically, these could be like your Active Directory or a custom store or, in the lucky case, a mix of the two. And so also, you can have this code pretty much scattered everywhere, because for the authentication, it's like a funnel that forces you through that. But authorization happens potentially anywhere. So you don't really know where code for authorization will pop up. And so that means that you have another happy collection of chains. So what is the meaning of these chains? Let's say that until you live in the broth of your system, like you have your internet, your Active Directory, and similar, then you are fine. Like, this may not be the most intelligent strategy, but it works. So who am I for telling you to change it? So let's represent your environment as like this surface. But then let's say that your manager, do we have any manager here? You'll have to forgive me. I'll do some humor about it. It's nothing personal. I'm thinking of my managers, not yours. So let's say that our manager flipped through all this marketing material from, you know, Microsoft, these interesting vendors that really want to push their stuff on you, and they discover about the cloud. Says, wouldn't it be so great to take this application, which is really hard to manage because one day per week, I have this super spike, and during the rest of the week, it's there, and all those servers are underutilized. I just want to move it to the cloud. That day of the week, I turn a big knob, I add all those instances. The other day of the week, I turn it down, and I pay less. So they come to you, and they say, make it happen. So here you have your interesting cloud, and let's say that you take this application, you ignore all those chains, and you move it up. And so you have it here. And so now your user will just go to a different address. And once it gets here, problems start, because they need to be authenticated. And how are you going to authenticate them if the database is here? Hopefully, you have a good firewall so that any attempt here would bounce. Of course, you could use something like that I absolutely dread, which would be like duplication. you could duplicate the database here and so maintain a list on both sides. But is it really a good idea? Let's say that this guy, for some reason, gets the boot or leaves the company or he is disgruntled anyway. You can easily deprovision him from your own database, but then you have to propagate everywhere. And this guy may just go directly to this app before you delete the account and buy, I don't know, 5,000 photocopier and deliver that to the house of your manager just for getting back at you. And simply because you had duplication in the database, which is absolutely dreadful. Also, once you go further and you get to the authorization part, if you are using Active Directory for any directory, not just Active Directory, for knowing about your user, well, again, you can't access it from outside. It's very legitimate to use the directory because you already made an investment. You already have intelligence in there. But it just cannot be moved outside. So the point is, here you have all those chains, and the ideal would be to actually be able to get rid of them, and somehow that would allow you to move your application around. And this is just one of the advantages that we have in losing the old systems. So we've been actually doing the right thing for authentication for about 5 or 6,000 years of Western civilization, also Eastern civilization, let's be fair. And normally here I do one example which is based on beer. Also in Belgium, hey, that's the minimum. However, I've seen that a number of you already saw the presentation, so I could also do something different. But the beer one really works well. So I'd like to ask a vote. How many of you are okay if I'm using the beer sample in here? Perfect, okay. Because I was feeling guilty, saying, you always do the same, I'll be bored. But if you're okay. So perfect. Let's see one transaction that takes place in the real world and how we can learn something about how we manage things in the digital world. So let's say that here in the vast emptiness of my white slide, there is one guy wandering. And of course, terribly bored because, you know, it's all white. So decides that I would really like to, I don't know, have a beer, for example. And so eventually runs into a bar with a bartender, which being Belgian, will have mustache. And then, since we are in Belgium, let's see if I manage. I apologize for my low skills, but this is supposed to be a Duval instead of a usual. All right. And our guy will, again, let's see if I manage to repeat the feat. Yeah. Yeah, it's credible, right? It's credible. Okay. And our guy asks for a beer. But our guy is hopelessly featureless. So it's very, very difficult to figure out if he's old enough to do that. In Italy, this would not be a problem. Like, you ask for something, and you get it right away. But here, you are in the north, and so maybe you follow rules more strictly. So it's meaningful to expect that the bartender wants to stay out of trouble and know that the guy is old enough. And the guy is kind of unlucky, because he is actually does not have any kind of identification on himself. Let's say that his driving license is expired. And so his only alternative is to actually go to the Department of Licensing. And here, usually I say that since I like my presentations to be equal opportunities, I like to make this clerk a woman. And then our person will ask for renewal of his driving license. Not very credible, but you'll forgive me. And this person, at this point, will go through her archives, probably on a computer, but the archive is more like, gives better the idea, will finally find the folder which contains the documentation about this guy, will make some tests, like, can you still see it correctly? And if everything goes well, she will actually send back a new driving license. At that point, our friend will be able to corroborate his request for a beer with a document. And at this point, he will finally, after all this trouble, get some liquid happiness. Okay, so this stuff is not, as a friend of mine like to say, rocket surgery. This is actually like something that hopefully not too often, but does happen pretty daily, at least to me, especially since I'm here. And here, beer is actually good. It happens pretty often. So what's for us to learn? Here, our bartender didn't really depend on any credential type for discovering that the person was entitled to a beer. He instead externalized authentication. What does that mean? That means that instead of verifying the age of a guy himself, which would have probably required drawing blood from the guy and taking a test, which would make getting beer much less pleasant, he would actually rely on the fact that another entity already has business reasons for knowing the age of this guy. And also this entity, the Department of Licensing or the government in general, has enough reputation for making the choice. So it makes sense. But what is the thing that makes this possible? Well, of course, I got it drawn in the wrong place. I apologize. See? I fixed it. All right. The document, which is the driving license, is supposedly something which is very difficult to counterfeit. So something that, by its sheer existence, implies that whatever is written on that is actually asserted by the Department of the Driving License. At that point, whoever trusts that, which here in Belgium may mean everybody, but like if you go in another country in which they don't recognize the format, they may not recognize it. They may ask for the passport, for example. But anyway, the point is, there is a way of caching information about people, users, applications, whatever you want, and bring just the information that you need so that in the context of this transaction, you have all the information you need without depending on a specific kind of credentials. And getting slightly more serious, let's get back to our situation. Let's say that here we have the application we have seen before. And let's say that your users, the users that you want to target, already live somewhere. For example, let's say you are writing SharePoint, you are working for Microsoft. It's not a bad deal, let me tell you. And you want to actually put as an authentication level all the people that are in your intranet, so your domain controller. So we say that you have what we call an identity provider, one entity that knows about your users and that you can rely upon, hence we call it in identity speak your application relying party, you can rely upon for performing all the authentication stuff that you don't care about. So let's see how the outlook changes. The identity provider, by definition, owns the list of the users. Otherwise, it would not be an identity provider. That also means that his responsibility is to verify authentication. And also, typically, it means that it will also own the list of the attributes. So at this point, your application is empty, or better, empty. It's just your application. But you still have a problem of how to authenticate people. So it's nice to know that somebody else knows all that it takes, but how do I tap on that? Luckily, there is an excellent answer, which is security token services. How many of you are familiar with web services? This is a very modern nation. Awesome. You wouldn't believe the kind of answers that I get around. So there is a special flavor of a web service, which we call a security token service, whose only job is to offer identity capabilities as a service, so that if that entity, be it a domain controller, be it a custom database of users, be it whatever knows about a population of users, there is a standard way of exposing authentication capabilities so that this service can be called in the context of any other transaction, so that from our application here, instead of performing authentication ourselves, we can involve the identity provider at the right time. So how do we do that? We transform the login that we have in something that lives outside of the application, something that intercepts calls, and if a user is not authenticated, it will decide which identity provider to call. It will redirect automatically the user, and things will be done without you worrying about making that happen. So here we have our happy user, now happy, that tries to get on the relying party, the application. It's not authenticated. There is a policy here that says, dear user, if you want to talk with me, you have to come back with something from that identity provider. So the user goes back to that identity provider. At this point, he can actually authenticate using whatever system the identity provider decided to use. And if he successfully authenticates, he gets what we call a security token. A security token is an artifact, bytes, that are digitally signed and basically correspond to a declaration from the identity provider, which says, I, identity provider, are hereby declare that this user successfully authenticated with me at this time. And anybody who trusts that identity provider will believe that, because there is a digital signature. There is more. Since there is a digital signature, anything that lives inside of a security token cannot be changed by anybody. So when you find a security token with something inside, you are sure that it was written by the identity provider. This allows the identity provider, this allows to the identity provider to actually write assertions about your user. So for example, my user is older than 21, or my user belongs to this group, or this user is an employee of that company. All kind of information that your application may need for going ahead with their business. We call those assertions, come on, it's a five-letter word, you can say it. Again. Thank you. Now I can go back to David and tell him, see, the Belgian audience is interactive. Requires a bit of pushing, but is interactive. Thank you. So now that you have the claims, what you can do is give back to the user, actually to the agent of his user, be it a browser or be it a rich client. And now this token can be sent back to the application. At this point, the interception layer can look at this token, do all the boring stuff that you needed to do with security, checking signatures, decrypting, verifying that the stuff is not expired, and all these kind of things without you worrying about it. And if everything goes okay, you actually get just what you are interested into. Let's say the claims. Claims that are now naked. Let's say that you have just the information about the user and none of the annoyances of knowing about the details of how the user got there. Which is really great, because at that point, if the identity provider switches tomorrow from username and password to Samol or to Kerberos or to whatever else, you absolutely don't care. Like the code that comes here and reads the claim is absolutely the same. And the good news is that now I can finally draw something about here and not have anything that crosses it. So this application is actually now independent. So this is actually a bubble, and as bubble can go wherever, including to the cloud. So this system is the right system for solving our problem. And in Microsoft Word, not the application, but the world, this is achieved using the Windows Identity Foundation. This blue thingy that you see here is Windows Identity Foundation. On this side, you may have heard about the term ADFS. ADFS is actually an out-of-the-box identity provider that you can use on Active Directory. I am not going to touch on that because it's for IT Pro. But if you're curious about the details, I'm happy to talk about this after the session. And just for giving you proof that thanks to this, you can finally have a clear separation of concerns, I will now make a demo which does not require any knowledge of security. So let's open this little website. Let's say that we live in a parallel world in which I made different choices, and so who knows, maybe I didn't end up in the States. And definitely, I didn't end up being like a security head, but instead I followed my heritage and I'm now a famous designer. So I worry just about the UI and I'm completely clueless, believe me, completely clueless about security. So now here I have this interesting UI, which represents an application that I'm building. It's an application for helping frequent flyers to book airplane tickets. So here I already made my artistic Italian design, and now I'm faced with two problems. One problem is, how do I make sure that only frequent flyers of that alliance have access to my application? And that's the most serious problem. The other problem I have is to make sure that the identity information that I have about people, like first name and similar, are actually driving this UI. So the first problem is actually pretty easy to solve thanks to Windows Identity Foundation. So if here I zoom on my project, you'll see that there is no trick. It's a very simple website. If I just right-click in here, you may notice this new entry which says add STS reference. You may guess what that means. If I use this entry, I will outsource the authentication of my website to that entity. So let's do that. So here I have a dialogue, which is not especially interesting. I can just go straight without worrying too much. I want to use an existing STS. So I have just to type the address. And since I am challenged, if I type, I cannot speak. So there will be a moment of uncomfortable silence. You are warned. Localhost. OK. So I know nothing about security. I just had to, somebody gave me this URL and said, type that URL. I don't understand what it means. So I click Next, and my tool is reaching out and trying to find out what it can know about this identity provider. And here I have, for example, the list of the claims that I will obtain about my user. I can see that those are interesting claims for an airplane ticket application. So good, I'm on the right track. And here, basically, once I click the wizard, something will happen. I have no idea what. And things will be fine. But let's say that I want to drive the behavior of this UI. For example, I want to put the first name in here. Now I'm receiving these in claims, so I don't need to write SQL queries and stuff like that. So here I have a little example. A control that is similar to the ASP.NET validator. How many of you are ASP.NET developers? Some. Oh, quite a lot. And how many of you ever used the ASP.NET validators? Oh, still some. For everybody else, the validators are controls that you can tie to other control, and they can express conditions, like don't post this form until this field is empty. Once it's filled, you can post. So here, I have a similar control that does a similar stuff with claims. So I have this control, and here I can tie it to another control in the page, for example, the text box of first name. I can say that I want to drive the text value, which is here. And if I click on expression, I will get a little dialogue, eventually, which allow me to assign the value of these, let me zoom for your benefit, one claim, for example, this one. And of course, this is easy. You could tell me, oh, well, this is data binding, so what? Well, I can do something more interesting, like, for example, driving, enforcing business rules. For example, let's say that here I have these advantages, such as the mid-flight massage. Wouldn't you actually love it to have something like that? And let's say that this is available only to people that are at gold level. So let's see how we can actually enforce this in the UI without writing any code. So I'm tying this to the control. I want to drive the enabled property. And the expression this time will be a comparison, a condition. And here, I click condition. I select frequent flyer level. I want it equal to gold. OK. So now, I didn't write a single line of code, remember, Italian designer. Click play, in case my accent doesn't remind that, you know, all the time. So here, instead of ending on my application, the system found out that I was not authenticated, so I got redirected automatically here. At this point here, I can sign in as Paul, who is a silver, poor guy. If I hit submit, here I have Paul, and here this is grayed out. So, wasn't very hard. Was actually super easy. And the beauty of all this is that it works pretty much with any .NET technology. So here I have a Silverlight app, which I know everybody likes Silverlight. Who knows why? And here I have an application that is used for a gym. Like if you are a member of a gym, you can use this for getting more information. So let's say the username could be like John, password. And here I'm using the identity information for modifying the UI, since in Silverlight it's easy. For example, here I have everything blue, because this guy is a guy. I have the max lift size of the icon, which is proportional on that. And I can do things like get training session, heart rate, and similar. And if I do the same, but this time I change the tone of voice and I am Mary, password. At this point, the result is slightly different. Hey, look at that. It's pink, and the dumbbell is smaller, simply because it's proportional to the max lift. And also here, since she's not a gold member, I am actually authorizing by graying out that button. And we have to go ahead, but the code that I used for using claims is exactly the same as the other one. So I now have a consistent model for doing all this stuff. I didn't use any advanced security. I'm sure you will agree with me. So the great stuff of using claims is that you can separate concern. If you are not a security expert and you don't want to become one, that's enough for just using security and never worry about that again. As opposed to today, learn a membership provider. Tomorrow, learn Active Directory. The day after tomorrow, learn Kerberos and see what changed in 4.0 for my membership provider, and so on. Now you are decoupled. If instead you are interested in security, this gives you more control. And in fact, from now on, I will assume that you are interested in security, and I will dig a bit deeper. So, Windows Identity Foundation. It is, as I said, an extension to the .NET framework. It comes as an independent download. So if you install 4.0, you will not find it in there. You have to download it on its own. But the good news is it also works with a framework 3.5. So you don't need to move to 4 immediately. The basic part is that it is one extension of the existing .NET model. So it's very well integrated with that, as we'll see in a moment. So you don't have to rewrite stuff unless you want to use new stuff. Makes this great thing, which is learn one object model in one system and reuse it across different hosting models. How many of you are WCF developers? Okay, so how many of you ever used WCF? Great. So in this case, you write whatever logic you want to write, and then modulo small changes in the hosting model that will work beautifully across different models, which is great because we are all very busy. If you like to avoid responsibilities, like I do, you'll be happy to know that most of the stuff can be changed via config. That means that you write your application, you tie it to the config, you deploy it, and again, it's a problem of the IT pro that is managing that. You can forget about it, which makes them happy because they are in control, they make you happy because you can play with the next toy instead of doing always the same. Of course, marketing asked me to remind you that this works on-premise and also in the cloud. And as you have seen before, we have little tools which help you to perform incredibly boring tasks without becoming socially inept. So as you have seen before, I made a couple of clicks in a wizard, and something happened. If I would have had to do that by hand, which was the case until like 1 year ago, that would have meant copying by hand the URLs, copying by hand the thumbprints of certificates, copying by hand a URN which represent protocols. So all mind-numbing stuff for which one single mistake screws everything over. So we have tools that bring things as far as they can so that you can worry only about your stuff, not about the syntactic sugar of the protocols, which I absolutely love. And also, as I like to say, if you have a lot of lonely nights, you can even write your own SDS, which is not something that I normally recommend, but we'll see in a moment why. There is a lot of more than this. So the model. How many of you ever used the iPrinciple? That is good to know. iPrinciple is the way in which you do identity in .NET. And so you have iIdentity and iPrinciple, they are good friends. And the model typically is, if you have something in your credential type, derive from iPrinciple and you'll be fine. This model is not exceptionally good, because if you make a choice on one like generic principle versus Windows principle, then you didn't make the other. Also, you are tying your code to that specific credential type, which, as we have seen, is bad. So what we did was exactly the same. Let's say we derived from iCam principle, but with the hope that this is the last time that is necessary. Let's say that what we have now is what we call iClaims principle, which works like iPrinciple. So your code that was using iPrinciple still works. But it also has the expressive power of adding the new stuff, claims and similar, so that you can use iClaims principle regardless of the credential type that you used, which is great. iClaims identity derives from iIdentity and is just one iIdentity plus claims. And what are claims? Claims are just one little class which has a pointer to the subject that contains them and has information like who is the identity provider, if there were more identity providers in the past, the type like age and the value 38. Every year gets bigger. And then you have things like value type and similar, and I'm not touching on everything because no point, but you see what where I'm getting at. Now you can have information about the user embedded in this nice way, and in this credential type independent way, which is the important part. Using it is pretty straightforward. You pick it exactly like you would do with an iPrinciple. You just make a couple of casts in the right place, and then how many of you use link? Great. So here you have just a collection that can have non-unique values, like if you have claims that are group, every user will have many group claims. So you can use link for actually querying things and pulling information about your user without really knowing how they authenticated, which I come back to say is really awesome. It's very well integrated with Visual Studio. We have seen the tool. There are many templates that can get you started with some pre-work. And there are a few controls that I'm not going to touch upon, but they make it easy to add the capabilities on your pages. So how does the magic happen? In ASP.NET, the magic happens thanks to HTTP modules. There are a few modules that live in front of your app that make all these redirection and enforce the protocol. For example, there is the Federation Authentication module, which implements WS Federation, which is one protocol. Potentially here, you could write your own module, like for example, if you like OpenID, you could write your own OpenID module and put it in there. Then we have a module that takes care of creating sessions, so dropping cookies, all the usual stuff. And then we have others that take care of authorization. So let's not go too much into details. Now, let me show you a slightly more articulated demo, which is the classic demo that we show in here, which is a shipping application. In this shipping application, basically, what happens? There is a company, a Datum, which is buying a subscription from a web ISV, Fabrica. I apologize for not being original, but our legal department allows us to use only those names, otherwise we'd be more creative. And this ISV sells a service which is picking up packages at your place and shipping them to their destination. So you just go through this app, which does not live on your intranet, lives outside, and you can use it signing in using claims and similar. So here I am at my domain controller. I'm putting username and password for giving you the time to see that something is happening. Normally, you wouldn't see anything. You would see here, tluck, tluck, if you have the sound enabled, because you just have a redirect. But you would not actually have to type anything. So let's be John for once. Password. So here I authenticated on my identity provider, and I get redirected here. And as you can see here, I am now in Fabrica, so different domain. However, I'm signed in, I am recognized as John. So let's say that I want a new shipment, actually. The little thing that you see here is a debug control, which you can freely download, that can help you to inspect the security token that you get. So if you want to debug your pages, you just download this control, you put it in there, and you can see the various claims. Okay, so let's create a new shipment. As you can see on this side, here, the sender information is already populated. Anyone want to take a wild guess about from where I got this information? Anyone? I know that I don't have gifts to give, but be like, have mercy. Somebody try to say that. From the token, perfect. Virtual gift to the gentleman in front. Those are claims. This could be the first and the last time that I get on this page, and yet this page has all the information it needs to perform its business function. The claims that describe the user. Among those, you may notice these group domain users, which will be useful later for authorization. So let's pick our typical guy, and let's hit submit. Yep. Okay, so we successfully shipped something. So let's take a peek at the code that made all this miracle happen. First, we'll take a quick look at the configuration. The wizard that I've shown before, the only thing it really does is reaching out to the identity provider, gathering all the information that it needs to actually invoke it as a service in one authentication transaction, and then saves this information in your web config so that your application is configured to act the way it did. So here, and this sample can be downloaded, so you can take a look at that. There is no trick. You have this Fabrican project, and let's take a look at the front end, which is a classic ASP.NET application. And in this application, we have a page new shipment, which is the page where we have seen all the various claims that we'll see in a moment. Here we have our web config. So what do I need for making Windows Identity Foundation work? Remember, those lines have been added by the wizard. I didn't have to write on my own. So don't go home thinking, oh my God, this is really complex and I needed to write angle brackets all the time. No. The wizard takes care of that. If you want to have more control, you can do that. But you are not forced to. So here, I have to add the config section, of course. Otherwise, the system would not recognize it. And then I have to put authentication to none, because I take care of that. I don't want ASP.NET to even try. And here, of course, I want everybody to be authorized. So far, nothing specific to Windows Identity Foundation. It's pure ASP.NET. Here, instead, you can see that I add the modules that I need, WS Federation and SAM. So now they are in the pipeline in front of my app. And then here I have this module, this configuration element, which is from where I save everything for my app. And for example, in this section, I have like the issuer that I'm using, which is the identity provider, and various other information like the protocol that I'm using, the fact that I want HTTPS, and similar. So all very straightforward. But luckily, there is a wizard that takes care of that. If I take a look at the code behind the page that used the claims, I actually find exactly the code that I described before. That's to say, here I grab my iClaims identity from the current thread, like I would do with classic iClaims principle, and I query the collection by pulling out all the attributes that I need. Again, imagine that something changes in the authentication system. This code is completely unaffected because I don't even know anything about that, which is very good. Okay, so just for giving you a feeling of what happens behind the scenes, and things are dramatically more complex than this. I'm writing a book on the subject, and this figure took various nights and various fights with my wife because she wanted me to do something else. And it's significantly more complex. But at a higher level, this, I think, is a good description of what happens. So imagine here that you get 01100001, and we can go on for various hours. That's the request that you get on the pipe. The first thing that the request encounters is our HTTP module that does federation. Here, if it's a request that is not authenticated, I will redirect it to the identity provider. If instead I am actually receiving a token and I'm authenticating, then I parse the request, and I now have a nice request that is all tokenized. And I can find the part that represents the token and then pick the right class, because this token could be an X509 token representing a certificate, or a SAML 1.0 certificate, or a token, or a SAML 2.0. So I needed to use a specific class which knows about the format and knows how to validate that. So at this point, I know which class I need, and so I instantiate it. So this one could be like X509, or it could be SAML 2.0. Oops. So what I have here is the token, and here we'll do all the boring stuff that the token requires you to do, the one that I said before. And if I'm happy with that, I will move to the next stage, which is the Claims Authentication Manager. Here you look at the list of claims, and you verify if they are the kind of claims that you would trust that issuer to produce. So, as I like to say, your insurance knows about your how much they can give you and when your insurance expires and similar, but they don't know about your blood type. Or, in theory, they shouldn't. And at that point, if you receive a blood type thing, you can get rid of that. So, true story. That's why I'm talking about insurance. Last Saturday, as I was preparing this happy deck, I had vendors in my house bringing the new washer. Again, my wife super happy, hey, new washer. And then as I was going for this, one person runs into my studio and says, sir, sir, where is the switch for the water? So, what? Yeah, and, a pipe broke into the wall. So it turned out that, of course, at the last floor of the house, this pipe broke and filled the entire house with water. And so I spent 3 days with people ripping walls apart and similar. So if you think that this deck is not especially clean, now you know why, and I hope that you'll show mercy in your evaluation. And that's also why insurance is at the top of my mind. Speaking of which, I have to make a call. So if everything worked, at this point I'm ready to say, yes, this token was good and I want to be in a relationship with you. So I will create a session. And in ASP.NET, creating a session usually means dropping a cookie. So let me write my best impression of a pretzel, which is a cookie. And in this cookie, typically, you put the list of claims. So that the next time I come back, I can read the claim from the cookie, and I don't force you to bring back and forth the token, which is great. And finally, after this, I get to the Claims Authorization Manager. So here I have a list of claims. I will have somewhere a policy associated to my application. This policy will say, if you want to call this method, you need to be in this role. Being in this role means having that claim with that value in the token. If everything goes well, finally, I manufacture one iClaims principle, I put it in the thread, and I finally get it to the application. If anything goes wrong in here, the execution will stop, and my application will never come into place. And if I want to change something, typically I can change it in the config, and again, the application knows nothing about it. So, really great. So let's talk for a moment about authorization. How many of you are used to the easing role call? A precious few. Now the question is, you are actually not using it, or you are sliding into food coma because I'm slowing down. So let me try that again, and now that I have your attention. How many of you use easing role? Yeah, all of a sudden, double the amount. That's great. Thank you. Good news. You can keep using it exactly with no changes. Easing role is based on I principle. And behind the scenes, it actually calls the easing role in I principle. And the same goes for authorization, the module, the element that you use in the web config. They still work exactly as before. In fact, if you receive a token with a special flavor of claim, special, one that says role in the name, then that happens automatically. That means that you don't have to change anything at all in your application. It will work. You can also take an arbitrary claim and explicitly map it, saying, I want this claim to be a role. Like, for example, you receive a group. Group is not a role, but kind of close sometime, and so you can actually explicitly make that connection, all via config. Of course, with claims, you can do something much, much more powerful. Simple things like, I will let you see this image only if you are older than 21. I'll leave it to your imagination what this could be. Elections, of course. You need it to be 21 for doing elections. So with claims, you can actually have a number or a date, and you can have a condition on top of that. And the way in which somebody like exhibits a certain attribute is much easier to manage than roles. Imagine trying to model age with roles. That's not possible. Like, it's ridiculous. I'm not even trying to explain how that would work. So with claims-based identity, with Windows Identity Foundation, you can use claims. You simply have to use a different model. You can't use this in role. You can use both. And the trick here is, there is a special class that you derive from. You put in there your authorization logic, and it will be executed upon the claims. And we have a lot of examples with that. And it's very easy to implement. WCF. I've seen that there is quite a number of you using WCF, which is great. The programming model that you have for claims and similar is the same. So, for example, if you wrote a module that I said before that makes claims-based authorization, you can take that same module, not recompiling it, the same assembly, and drop it in front of ASP.NET or in front of WCF, and it will work beautifully. Of course, there are a few little changes in terms of architecture, like the HTTP module works if you are requesting pages using HTTP. If you start doing remote calls via SOAP and similar, that's different. Also, the activation mode is different, like the pipeline of WCF has its own rules. So, what's the trick? The easiest way of putting WF in front of a WCF service is to make that call. Whoa, this is a big screen. To make that call, which basically just injects a custom behavior for the ones of you that have little social life and know really a lot about the WCF pipeline, and injects its own iService behavior, which contains all the instantiation of a WF pipeline. Or, for web-activated services, you could create your own factory, and inside the code of a factory, you can put that call. And we would not be Microsoft, we would not be giving you many different options for doing substantially the same thing. And you do have a way of adding WF instead of using pure configuration. There is a behavior extension that you can just add to your endpoint, and that takes care of that. We have a number of interesting things for WCF. I won't go into the details, but we have new bindings, which makes super easy to obtain a token from ADFS. While if you are used to write things like WS, HTTP, federation, and binding, you know that that's not exactly walking in the park. Instead, those guys are literally one line, and ta-da, everything works. So let's take a look at that. So let's go back to our little application. And let's say that I did something wrong and I want to modify it. So I go back to my shipment, hopefully before the session ends. Yep. I try to reroute the shipment. And surprise, surprise, I can't. I can't because rerouting is something that requires more privileges than my current user. So let's see how we actually achieved that. Here I have again my project. Let me zoom for your benefit. And here, actually, I am implementing all these using a front-end and a back-end. The back-end has a few WCF services which implement a function. So let's start from the actual function, like the method of a shipping modifier. So let me zoom out. Ah, lucky strike, we already have the info in here. Here we have the reroute shipment method, which is literally three lines of code. There is something that is notably absent from this code. And I already know that you are not going to tell me, but for due diligence, I'm asking, what is missing from these few lines? Okay, I'll do it. They pay me, so I can do it. Authentication and authorization. This method is performing only the business function it has been designed to perform. It is rerouting a shipment. It's not caring about user. It's not caring about roles. There is nothing in this method that can be affected by changes outside. User changes, kind of credential changes, the kind of roles that I'm using changes, the business rule that says this guy can route or not route, I completely don't care. The person who wrote this may be like a business analyst that knows about process and provisioning and similar and knows nothing about security. This is exactly the place where we want to be, or at least the place where I want to be. So we did authorize. So how did we do it? Well, the trick is in the config of the hosting of those services. If I go in the service hosting here and I take a look at the web config, again, don't be scared by all those angle brackets. Here I have one element, which is the claims authorization manager. Let's see if I manage to highlight it. And I do. I have one element which says, okay, for authorization, I would like to use this class, which is the same class that I described before. And now I have these elements that are like these policies, which actually contain a reference to a resource, which in this case is in WCF service, to an action, which is the action that I want to call, and then the claim type that I want to impose should be there. And this claim type is role, and the value is, in this case, the role shipping creator. Let me zoom as well. If I scroll down to the shipping modifier, shipping router, I would find that I require the shipping modifier role. So that's as simple as that. If I want to change something, I change it in here. And the class that performs this check is absolutely not rocket science. Like, in fact, I'm not even going to show that because it's not very interesting. It's just reading these policies, checking that what I'm asking in the policy checks the incoming claim, done. And here I'm checking roles simply because that's something that people can wrap their head around, like you are used to use roles. But we have examples, if you download the identity training kit, we have examples in which I do make stuff that you cannot do without claims. Like, for example, the age check that I described before. Okay, so let's get back to the slideware. Okay, the favorite topic of a lot of friends of mine, developing an SDS with Windows Identity Foundation. ADFS is our premier identity provider, something in which we poured literally like many, many decades of manpower. Like among the finest experts in Active Directory worked on that stuff for various years. So it's nice, fine-tuned, works really well. We check it, we maintain it, we support it. So if you can, if you need an identity provider and you are on Microsoft platform, of course, if you are on other platforms, there are equivalent products which interoperate out of the box, so really great. But of course, as a shareholder, I prefer you guys to be on Microsoft, of course. No surprise. Usually, it's best to use that. But there are situations in which you want to be able to. For example, you are developing. You need an SDS for getting a token and testing your application. And you don't have an ADFS available. Or in rare cases, you may not have Active Directory. That would be surprising, but hey. The word is beautiful because it's different. And in that case, ADFS would not fit you because ADFS is a feature of Active Directory, so without Active Directory, it's kind of hard to use. So you may end up writing your own SDS. If you're writing your own SDS for development reasons, fine, do whatever. There is no security involved. But if you're writing it instead for production, be warned, this is not an easy task. Because we now take care of a protocol. So up to a few years ago, actually, let me ask, did any of you ever tried to write one security token service? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, wow. Wow. And you still seem stable in terms of personality, so which is great. So before Windows Identity Foundation, writing an SDS was the work of like... you had to take care of the canonicalization of the RSA keys, of the various kind of algorithm in all its little shades. And on top of that, you had to do it secure, available, solid, performant, and so on. Today, you needed to just care about those. That's to say that Windows Identity Foundation provide you with classes that will take care of the protocol. And will also provide you Rails. Like there are standard things you want to do with one SDS. The object model that we offer actually helps you, like it gives you a line for building that stuff. However, what we cannot do is making these secure and available and scalable and performant, because you are writing the host, and it's the host that makes all the difference. So don't be deceived in saying, hey, look at that. I open the SDS template, I hit the F5 and it works, I am done. No. That's just the beginning. And I'm not even talking about managing trust and similar. Like, this is not an easy task. So if you do it, make sure that you allocate enough resources. So ADFS is actually built with Windows Identity Foundation. Like, Windows Identity Foundation is just putting in nice assemblies whatever we used for building ADFS. So if you do your own SDS and it doesn't scale, you cannot use as an excuse that you use the Windows Identity Foundation because we use it for ADFS and it does scale. So, disclaimer. One interesting thing is that the same class that you write is exactly the same class that you would host in ASP.NET or in WCF. So, that's a nice advantage. We maintain the same object model. As I said, you can easily create one in no time, but beware. And here you have various things that you need to think about. You have to decide from whom you want to get tokens, like who you trust. Or you have to decide if you are dealing with users, how to manage credentials. At that point, you cannot externalize authentication. You are the place where people externalize authentication. So all the problems that I said before are now on your back. And then you have to handle keys and similar, which is never an easy task because PKI is PKI. And then you need some logic. Okay. So before I actually show you an SDS in action, I would like to show you an interesting application of using all these, which is kind of like the return of investment. Like, if you use a claims-based identity, you can do things that would be very difficult to do with traditional technology. For example, handling delegation. And here, let me make an example. Here is our usual user. I'm not going to do anything weird this time. Let's say that this user, no, well, let's do it. Let's say that this guy is a doctor. Okay, he's a doctor. He's using a portal of a hospital. And this portal allows him to see the list of all his patients. So the flow, at this point, you know it. He gets a token with a claim that they describe him somehow. And then he uses this token for signing up with the front end. Now, the front end calls the back end for getting the list of the patients. And in the typical situation, this happens in what we call a trusted subsystem. That's to say that the front end will have its own credentials, be it a certificate, username, or whatever, and those will be used to make the call. And this call will somehow bring back like the list of patients of this doctor. Hopefully, because this token representing the application like gives godlike power to the application. So it's a responsibility of the application to ask just for the patients of this guy. But this application is exposed to the user. So if this guy by day is a doctor and by night he is Neo of Matrix and likes to break into things, inject SQL, and do similar stuff, then, well, this application is not going to give him only his patients for long. He's eventually going to give the entire house. So, and that's why, because you are using this trusted subsystem. I don't know if you ever went to these interesting touristic villages in which they give you this little thingy. You enter, and once you exit, you are like 20 kilos more, because wherever you go, you are no longer authenticated. Like, thanks to that stuff, you can do whatever. That's a trusted subsystem. Like, all the bartenders, all the various things that are in there, they implicitly trust you simply because you are within the perimeter. That's not something that works very well, as we have just seen. The alternative is to use the infrastructure, for example, using Kerberos constrained delegation. But that's not easy, because that's expensive, that requires massive work on the actual domain controller and similar, and so usually the administrators are not especially keen to enable that. Also, remember, you move to the cloud, where is your Kerberos? Not available. So there is an easier solution which is based on claims-based identity. So imagine that you have yet another STS, which could also be the same, but usually it's simply different because the backend needs to trust it, and the backend usually doesn't see the outside world, so it's usually an internal STS. And let's say that you can actually go to this STS as an application of the frontend, get a token for the backend specifically for the guy that is calling you. So what you do is you use your own credentials, but you also attach the token that you received. At that point here, you may have logic which executes upon this, which is the description of a user, and can actually render a token which reflects the actual capabilities of the caller. So not the application, but the caller. At that point, the front-end can use this token, and there is nothing you can do at the front end for like making elevation of privilege, because you just tied this down. If you are using impersonation first, for doing the same, you are in trouble, because you are, if you are impersonating with the entire website, you are back to square zero. But also, you may be aware of a dreaded double hop problem. How many of you know what is the double hop problem? Many of you. For the ones who don't, when you are using impersonation, or in general, like Windows tokens without Kerberos constrained delegation, you cannot reuse this stuff ad infinitum. Like, you have your first interactive Windows token, you can get an impersonating token for making yet another call, but if you try to use a token that was already a delegated one for getting another delegation, the system won't allow you, so you can't make more than two hops. With this system, you can do as many hops as you want, because you control that. And if you want to keep track, like for example, every time you do a hop, add something to the token saying this token was reissued, you can do it. If you want to have logic in here that treats differently delegated tokens or delegated tokens of fourth generation versus first generation differently, you have complete control over that without having to ask anything to your friends in the IT Pro world, which I personally really like because I don't like to ask things to people. So let's take a very quick look at how that actually works. Here I have my website. And okay, here we are clearly not in Kansas anymore. Let's say that here we are talking about security stuff. So don't expect to see easy code in here. Like people that do this may not have to talk with the IT pro, but they need to know what they are doing. So in the front end, in the global ASAX, here I have some code that once I receive the first token that starts my session, take that token and use it for getting another token for calling the backend. In fact, here you can see this code. I will not torture you with a code of get delegated token, which is pure WCF goodness. And once you have the token, we actually inject it in our call to the methods or to our backend. We have seen already that the backend authenticates using the roles that we have seen. And inside our application, we have our ACTAS STS. The entire thing I described goes under the moniker ACTAS. And here we can see some easy logic for transforming the incoming token in a new token. So here we have one method, which is one method that you need to override when you are writing your own STS. And it contains the code for creating your own claims. And here I am reading the claims from the request that I received. But you may see this element, the ACTAS. That means that I'm looking at the claims, not at the caller, which is the application, but the original caller, which is the user. And at this point here, I have some code, which basically just finds out if the user was a manager or was just the main user. And then, if it was a manager, it adds the shipping modifier role. So at this point, this STS transformed the incoming token claims that were groups into roles that the backend understands. The other advantage is that this STS lives close to the backend, so knows about the roles that are needed. If you ask an external identity provider, for example, your partner, like this doctor maybe from another hospital, you cannot ask them to know about your roles. So with this system, you can actually decouple and take care of incompatibilities in a way that is completely transparent. So you don't have to write integration code in your app, which is always a thankless task. And that said, we literally just scratched the surface. There are so many things that you can do, including, for example, translating SAML tokens that are XML into Windows tokens so that your app can access like file shares and similar using Windows permissions, but actually have users coming from outside, which is really awesome. Or other things like how can I, when somebody is already authenticated, ask them to provide more powerful credentials if they are trying to do something more complicated. There's a lot of these. The demos that you have seen, the controls and the fabric I'm shipping, are easily available online. And they have been tested many times, downloaded many thousands of times. You can always find a bug, of course, so feel free to send me a mail, but those should be pretty solid examples. And then you have various resources. There is the MSDN homepage of Windows Identity Foundation. There is a good forum you can use where the product team actually look at that. So send questions in there and you will get answers. There is the team blog where we put interesting stuff. There is a training kit which costed me many, many, many white hair so that you guys can learn about Windows Identity Foundation. And I'm being told it's actually good. It's already various times that we use it as a hands-on lab. And again, it has been downloaded many thousands of times. So I really suggest if you want to gain hands-on knowledge on these, to go there and try to use that. It also shows specific things that are difficult to do on your own, like using these with Silverlight, using these with Azure, and similar. And then there is a show on Channel 9. If you have trouble going to sleep, there is my blog. I'm told it's very useful. So, summary. Claims Identity simplifies authorization, authentication, and similar. Windows Identity Foundation makes this easy to do it on Windows. So it's time to free your application. And borrowing from a famous commercial, Windows Identity Foundation gives wings to your application. Thank you.